This is the Mindful Musical Life Podcast. I'm Kevin Miske. Our guest this week has to be my favorite Canadian pig farm-raised magician horn player in the world. Jeff Nelson is the current horn player with the world-famous Canadian Brass and has spent a total of over 10 years touring and recording with them. Jeff has also performed concerti and chamber music on six continents and the horn sections of dozens of orchestras, including the New York and Los Angeles Philharmonics and the Boston, Chicago, Cincinnati, Montreal, and St. Louis symphonies. He is professor of horn at the prestigious Indiana University Jacobs School of Music and is founder of Fearless Performance, a company that focuses on training musicians and more to consistently perform their best. Jeff knows how important one's mental approach is to high-level performing, and in this interview, we discuss his Fearless Performance training system and online learning community, as well as Jeff's experiences with the mental and emotional challenges present in performing, and how he has trained himself to overcome these challenges. I have spent a lot of time in my life listening to Jeff and working with him, but there is something new or exciting that I discover every time we talk, and I'm sure you will feel the same way after this conversation. So here's Jeff. Hi, Jeff. I'm so excited to talk to you today. I've been looking forward to getting you into this podcast for a long time. So I know that you have a little bit of experience both personally and as an ensemble member with different types of meditation. So I'd love to hear kind of your experiences with that a little bit and maybe what got you interested in that. And if you do any kind of meditation or any kind of mindfulness practices now, what that might look like.
Yeah, sure. Hi, Kevin. Nice to see you. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me on. What's it called? Method Nation?
Yeah. That's it.
I've never. Yeah. No. Any other question? I think my first dive into Eastern philosophy and mindfulness, I think, was when I couldn't start notes. 1994, I had won my second audition. The year prior was Fourth Horn in Winnipeg, one year contract, and then I won this one in the Montreal Symphony. That's a big deal. And I started not being able to start notes. So I got put on a book called The Path of Insight Meditation, Vipassana Meditation, I think it's called. And it's just watching your breath, I think. Ooh, that was a long time ago. And it was a little book, too, by Shambhalaya Publishings. This neat little book, and I ended up probably underlining and circling and putting lightning bolts over every word at some point. But I had it with me, and that really kind of had me being a little bit more peaceful and more present about that. So at first, it was just a bunch of reading books, Zen in the Art of Archery, Zen in the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. Mm-hmm. And then I joined Canadian Brass. It's a brass quintet out of Canada. And there they bought me a course for insight. My mind just went ironically blank.
it was transcendental meditation, right?
That's it. I was trying to think of a word that started with M. Meditation. Another word. I think I should go meditate. And I went to that course. It was a 3-day course. It was awesome. And they had been doing it for a long time. And they even went to India once. And anyway, so I remember on the second day, the way I joined Canadian Brass was pretty really quick. And I ended up staying in Toronto where they asked me to join. And had all my stuff shipped from Vancouver, where I was playing in the symphony there. So I was sleeping on pull into the story. I was sleeping on the tuba player's son's floor in Toronto. And so I got ready to ask, I asked the instructor, anywhere I can get a good massage. And they were like, well, let's do the meditation. And then, yeah, I can talk to you about that after. And we basically closed our eyes, and it was 20 minutes of saying a mantra over and over. And it's an ancient Sanskrit word. And you just say it over and over. And then when you leave the mantra and go thinking about other things, your goal is to calmly notice that you're off your mantra and calmly go back to saying your mantra, over and over again. And I did that for 20 minutes. And then I opened my eyes and I went to ask again. And I remember saying, I was like, so I wonder, you know, where around pretty close by here, is there anywhere I can get a good massage? Because my back was sore. What the? And I don't know if it's true or what, you know, but I may have had even physical things from meditation, which is pretty wild, but I don't know, you know, things vibrate and sound vibrates. I don't know if saying an ancient magical word even does that, but so that's
maybe just the act of, you know, having some time where you weren't just totally focused on that discomfort or pain, you know, right. Let it kind of dissipate on its own. That's I've experienced that before too, you know, like sitting and you start to get like my foot's itchy or, you know, whatever. My leg's starting to fall asleep, and then all of a sudden, if you just stop paying attention for a while, it goes away.
Yeah. You're reminding me of, I think I've talked to you about this before, but like certain exercises I put myself through, like when I'm in the dentist's chair, I relax my hands because I get all tense. I relax my jaw because you can have your mouth open either really tensely or calmly, you know, and then, you know, every time I remember to relax my hands, I relax them. And then the next time I remember to relax them, I already have a lot of room to relax them again. Like I just get that tension over and over and over again.
Anyway. So one of the things that, so with the transcendental meditation, it's very similar to lots of different mindfulness techniques and things where you're like intentionally returning to a object of focus and doing so in as much as possible, a non-judgmental way. So then did you kind of continue that practice from that point, or did the group kind of continue to do it as a group activity?
Not much. Gene Watts is the trombone player, and it was Chuck and Gene were the final two founding members in the group, and Chuck is still in the group, and he is still meditating. And sometimes we do pre-concert meditations about an hour before the show, just 10 minutes. Actually quite often, I think, and traveling for sure. Every time we get on a plane, or driving, I try not to do it while I'm driving, but,
good plan.
Yeah, that went badly. You learn, you know, have you heard, this is where Chuck would say, the joke about how what is it? Oh, I think when I die, I want to go out like my grandfather, nice and peacefully in my sleep, unlike the rest of the people in his car. Shoot, I messed it up. Anyway.
No, that sounds like a Chuck joke. I like that.
Yeah. I think that mantra, we do it about an hour before concerts. And it's what I akin it to is having the dust settle and just like, oh, that silence. And I love it.
Yeah, working on being present. Yeah.
Sorry,
just saying, like, again, getting you present, right? Helping you to kind of be where you are. And
and I think actually one physical thing for sure, whether this is physical or not actually, but I think my eyesight clears up a bit also. I know when I have had long trips to Asia and Europe and I get off the plane and it's really hard to read the signs in the airport. I mean, I'm old now, I'm 53, but I think I see more high def after I meditate too. It's pretty cool. Yeah. I can't, you know, recommend it enough. So the dust settling, the presence, and just the space in my mind to see and go to things by choice and intention instead of be reactionary, you know, and emotionally judgmental, you know.
The idea of kind of cleaning up your focus too, I think that's one of the best benefits to any kind of like mindfulness or meditation technique for the most part, is like training your focus and being able to, like you said, kind of choose where you want your focus or where you want your awareness to be at any given moment. I'm sure you can think of lots of reasons why that would be beneficial as a performer, especially, you know, as frequently and on as big a stages as you do, right? Being able to kind of choose not to focus on this and focus on, you know, what you're doing at the moment.
I don't know. What were we talking about? I was known as the shiny object boy in school. Just anything that, you know, and they'd make jokes about that. You're talking to Jeff and all of a sudden he's off on something else, you know. And I have ADHD. So, and I have, I was known as the shiny object boy. So I, oh wait, I already said that. So I have short memory. All these things are wonderful for meditation. And yeah, that's helped with all of those things. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And having all those judgments, I think, can pile up and really muddy the waters. And, you know, that presence is really, I saw a great thing on Facebook, just a meme that said, if you're anxious, you're living in the future. If you're depressed, you're living in the past. And if you're at peace, you are living in the present, or you're thinking in the present or whatever. I love that. Like that anxiety, specifically anxiety, is because we're in the future and we're trying to control something we can't. And then right. the depressed part is you're living in the past and you're depressed that you can't change it, you know.
Yeah.
That's where those things happen. And then if you're in that moment, you know, and I love not having a scoreboard and knowing how I'm doing in a concert. And that's, you know, that's also just true presence defined, right?
Yeah. Being able to kind of, you know, let things go and keep on doing what you're doing and focusing where you need to be. Yeah, such a crucial skill. So talking a little bit about non-judgment and dealing with those kinds of thoughts that we all experience, do you want to share a time when you kind of felt like those thoughts were especially challenging for you and you were having to really make some concerted effort to let them go or to get through them?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Kevin. I've let all of that go. I don't have any memory of anything.
Oh, good. Maybe you can make something up.
Okay, well, when I was 12, I was born at a very early age. The starting notes, I still, you know, it's still there sometimes where 2 and 3, you know, that hesitation or whatever it's called, I believe that I'll always have it. And I've just got really awesome systems now, and it doesn't happen, but I do have to be thoughtful about it. And it all lies in timing, 2 and 3. You know, that kind of system. But for years, yeah, I almost quit horn around, you know, after the Montreal, that 1 year in Montreal, it was just, I went to some auditions and didn't advance and all because of these things that was a mental hell. Really fun. I mean, great learning opportunities. And it has been, because now I help a lot of other people with their hesitations, you know, and, a specific story. I mean, I've played there's a quintet. It's called Quintet by Michael Kamen. He wrote this piece for Canadian Brass and a cool video on YouTube as well. But it starts with horn and it's just, and then the quintet comes in. And, you know, we talk about me and Michael Kamen right beforehand and thousands of people in the audience every night and everything. And sometimes it would just be, so that's been a lot of work and doing breath attacks and thinking I'll never work again, but to my shock I keep getting hired. And but the meditation, the work of meditation itself backstage before concerts really helped. It added up a lot. I noticed a lot of that. And then the flash of presence right before, you know, and I would, at one point I was like, okay, when the last cell of my middle toe hits the ground, that's when I release that note. Ready, 2 and 3. Whatever, all these different tricks. And for a while I was trying to, you know, start before I got in my own way, you know, just play, pick up the horn and pull. Did I get it? You know, that wasn't as successful. I was pretty chaotic and it could work, but the presence is where it's at, baby, as you know. What's this called? What's this podcast called? Find chaos in the focus? No, what?
Yeah. I'll have those moments, right, where you're kind of a million things going through your brain and there's a million things happening on stage or just in life too, obviously, and being able to kind of just let stuff go by and get back into where you need to be, back in where you want to be.
Yeah. And that's the greatest thing about being a musician, or I think any performer, whether you're a magician, or cook, you know, or a teacher is, once it's amiss, what now, what, you know, you're right, now what? That's going to be the title of my second book when I finish my first book, the Fearless Performance book. But all the things we're right about, now what? Now, you know, that next second after noticing it's not what we wanted, or someone else is, you know, playing in an orchestra, or playing in a quintet, playing with just one other person, playing alone, gotta have the data, but execution is, that's the one difference, right? Between, there aren't many differences between the practice room and onstage performance, but one is, I think, optimally, that there is no past, that we don't go back for notes, and we don't think, you know, we're not playing now, oh, that was really bad, oh, now, oh, you just messed it up again, you made the same mistake, but, you know, and all that has to be now, and equally potentially destructive is now, oh, that was really good, wow, that was now.
Right. Yeah, I love that feeling when you nail something and then you go, oh, that was really good, and then you miss a note right after that. Yeah. And so I call that the success fail.
Nice. Yeah, it's instant karma, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So also, anything where you're living in the past or the future while performing, it's never a good thing. I am extremely familiar with your system of fearless performance, but why don't you talk a little bit about what you saw in yourself or in students or whomever that really got you interested in really focusing and trying to create a system of fearless performance, and give us a little kind of rundown of what you do and how you work with clients and students and friends and colleagues and anyone who will listen.
Right, sure. I got really frustrated with walking on stage optimistic and walking off stage disappointed. So had to figure out what was going on. I quit horn through high school as well. I think that was part of it. So when I came back to it, that first gift that helped me realize how mental it was, I think, was that I wasn't very good at the horn when I came back to it. So I could play badly, but not feel bad about playing badly. So I think I did the stuff that I couldn't do more often than most people. I didn't want to sound good in the practice room. I mean, I wanted to, but I did the stuff that didn't sound good, probably more than most. And then I wasn't too destructive on myself for it. So then it was being able to walk on stage and perform what I knew I could do on my first version. And that's where I, you know, figured out the whole magic line performance method and all that, and started sharing it with other people a lot. I started, you know, and I just started teaching a lot when I was playing in orchestras in different towns and doing summer festivals. Music Academy of the West was one we're doing with Canadian Brass every year. And a lot of people were asking me to do talks about audition prep and performance methods and things. Mm-hmm. And it's just centered in, what's the difference between, you know, I ask everyone, you know, at the beginning of the class, has anyone here ever experienced preparing something to a certain level and then walking out on stage in front of people and have it go not quite as well? All right. Hands go up. And that's the quality gap. We call that the quality gap between what you can do and what you actually do on your first version, because we will never hear your second version of anything. It's not just about being able to do it. It's on that first version. So for me, I isolated what was different between the practice room and on stage. And literally, it's the walk. I can sit in a room and play it. But once I walk on stage, then I start thinking other things. I start thinking, I can make the mistake of this time matters more. Thinking that is showing me that actually I just didn't make all the other times matter enough. Just right. Make every note beautiful and as much as, you know, as at the highest quality.
What seem to be the most common kind of unhelpful thoughts that people have in that walk? Because in that walk from backstage to onstage, you know, either you personally or just, you know, people you've worked with, what are some of the things that are the biggest traps, I suppose, that people fall into?
Making sure is a good one. You know, when you walk out there or I do a whole masterclass now on what does go for it really mean to you. And so I think that's one of the big ones, because they walk on stage and again, deciding that this time matters more versus, for me, I'd much rather be an idiot. And that's why it's fearless performance, not confident performance. you know, if I decide I need confidence, I've decided something about that place, that arena that I'm walking into. I'd much rather be that idiot child just walking out there going, okay, let's play. You know, and athletes talk about that a lot too, right? Right. So if you go for it in performance, if you want to do, you know, 1% more music making in concert, you have changed your technique. Even 1% on a French horn, that's enough to miss a lot more notes, you know, on any instrument at a high level, right?
Right.
So that's the mistake versus execution, you know, and really just, if this is performance number 72, and do it again beautifully. And you've, you know, you've sussed out in your plan, the greatest plan you can, and you've seized all the opportunities you can. But so the opposite of that, you know, making sure is trust and belief that you've gone through the music enough to get all the crescendos and color changes and, you know, Frozen Lake sounds even, you know, you don't have to crescendo to be making effective music. So that when you walk out there, you're executing like an Olympic athlete to, you know, we're allowed to just execute. You don't have to be the greatest artist in performance, especially for auditions where we have 12 excerpts and you have to get in the cell of every single interval and every beat of every note, you know.
Right. The when you were preparing for, you know, something that I, me personally, you know, having, you know, used Fearless Performance a lot, one thing I still find challenging is getting my kind of approach in the practice room to be at the same level as what I'm going to want to do with performance in terms of just like my mental state or my mental approach. So what are some of the ways that you have found to kind of try to even that playing field a little bit more, or some ways that you've seen that work for others?
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I want to get a little bit more clear about what you're saying. The approach to music making in the practice room, you'd like that to match more what you're, how you're approaching the performance of the same repertoire?
I guess the when you're preparing repertoire, whatever it is, it happens to be, the mental kind of practice that's going along with the musical practice that you're doing in the practice room, how to kind of get that to feel a little bit more like you're going to do on stage, I suppose. I know that that comes in like Magic Land performances and, you know, mm-hmm. replicating performance as often as possible. But is there anything, you know, like if you're, let's say you're working on a really technical passage in a piece and you're doing lots of repetitions and things like that, but you want to really try to infuse a more, I guess, performance related mental state into those kind of repetitions and things like that. Does that clarify what I'm getting at?
I'll throw something out there and see if it, I mean, it's context and timing for me has me all in, you know, obsessively in the music, in that context. What beat are these notes? I never play, like, every note I play has a bar line somewhere. Like they're on beat three or on beat four. They're going to, you know, and I always phrase to beat one 90% of the time. So maybe I don't know what the word always means. but that frequently, you know, that usually works with anyway. So yeah. And then timing, like not just rhythm, but timing two and three and four and one. So super crazy, loud, musical sense of timing. I believe every one of my notes that I missed is a time. You know, you've heard me do this before, right? About every missed note is some sort of mistake of timing, right?
Right.
So train myself to, when I miss a note, I up my timing. I get it even louder so that I'm more present in this beat, in the beat I'm going toward. But yeah, context. And with that is linked to timing and then the context of whatever the music is that I'm playing my part within. As well, you know, in the orchestra, in the quintet, piano. So that one great thing about iPads now, and I have I have one here, Flick, FLIC is the company that makes the button that I have stuck on my bell that turns pages on my
right.
And it's real game changer. It's awesome. And I can play off the piano score when I'm playing with piano. So just even more awareness while I'm playing of what's going on around me. I mean, I should know what that score is regardless, but yeah. So that's another way to up how loud the context is in our mind, you know. And
yeah, absolutely.
Going along with the keeping that performance state of mind in the practice room. Yeah. Good question.
Yeah.
Good thought.
You know, because I think it's easy to kind of, like you said, you get on stage or you get close to a performance, you know, a couple of days ahead or whatever. And then all of a sudden you're like way more intentional with what you're doing, or you're way more effortful with the way that you're practicing, or you're much more conscious of what's going on. And I think it's so important to remember that with part of the practice, what, like just musical practice, is to realize that kind of thing and to be aware of like what you're doing and what you're focusing on, you know, every single time you're practicing or playing your instrument.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, and what, if you don't make your habits will make you, just all those ways. I was talking to someone the other day, I think it was on actually our podcast, that gone. Oh, someone was asking about repertoire and then doing routine work, you know, and it came down to timing again, and how everything we do is creating habits, you know, and your bodies don't discern between good and bad habits. We just learn habits. So I do 2 25-minute routine sessions a day when I'm practicing. And then I do repertoire, but while I'm doing repertoire, I don't do too much routine stuff there. There it's more about learning this interval and this, you know, and still I have a Bluetooth microphone on my bell, and and the tuner is showing me my tendencies and things as well, and I'm calibrating to the tuner. But yeah, it's a lot more repertoire based, but I play my routine as beautiful and as musical as possible every time, with color matchings and all those habits that are hopefully happening as well. So that work is linked, and I get that work done throughout. And so again, I don't think any note matters any more than any other. There's some notes that the context has them being the only sound on stage. And I'm not saying I don't get nervous when the rest of the band disappears and I'm solo. I get more nervous, but I go into the context and I go into the glory of French horn, you know, and all that stuff that helps me disappear and my fears, and go into those gifts, those opportunities. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm assuming that part of the way that you're able to kind of get into that really high level of musicality and commitment in the routine is because you've experienced so much of that as a performer too, right? You've done so much time like where you're sharing music. And so that's kind of, I'm wondering if that's kind of become more of your default. Is that like you know that feeling, and so you can replicate that feeling more easily, maybe in routine type stuff. To be clear, that's, you know, technique, flexibility, scales, arpeggios, long tones, all that kind of great stuff. Would that be accurate, do you think?
Yeah, especially the gift of being in Canadian Brass, you know, 100 concerts a year, I get to be on that, in that laboratory of a stage,
right,
in front of a lot of people, and I can try things out each night different, and really, you know, it's all what we're talking about here is self-knowledge and knowing, just, and everyone's different. So that's why there isn't one system that everyone's doing, you know, that we got to figure ourselves out through all these templates of different types of meditation and different types of belief in ourself. And it's an amazing journey. And the frequency of performance is huge for self-learning. Yeah.
Right. I am wondering, you know, so for me personally, I mean, because I'm an active meditator and everything else, I do at least a short meditation before every practice session, like just something, even if it's like 10 counted breaths or something like that, where I'm just trying to kind of center myself and focus and get into the kind of mental state that I want to be in, to be able to, you know, really dive into whatever I'm going to play, whether it's routine or whether it's a rehearsal or, you know, a magic line performance or whatever it might be, to try to get me into that state. Any suggestions or anything where so people can try to kind of get into that like on their own?
Yeah, I had a person who's been at a few of my Fearless camps, Frank Graves, the violinist out of Boston, and he watched, and one of a co-writer for a Fearless, when I was working on the Fearless performance book years ago, and he watched me do some magic lines, and then we talked right after, and he's like, okay, so I saw you do that, what were you thinking there, you know? And I think the magic line stuff can also pertain to practice stuff. And so one of the things that he and I differ is that he plays a lot more notes because he plays violin. But he tries to get to a certain state. And you just said that you like to do 10 counted breaths or whatever it is to get to that state that you would like. I think, if I'm quoting mm-hmm. accurately. And for me, I just get in, I don't know if this is any different, but I get to the best state I can. So I don't look for any specific state of mind or state of body. And I think it is a little different, like that I just get as clear as possible and then go out there and do it. And one of the ways I do that actually for walking on stage is I noticed, this is in my studio, which you know really well, that every time I did it, I looked out the window for a second, really casually. And this is what I was going to say before, that another, I think, potentially destructive thing people do is they change who they are. They really turn into this good performer and end up losing the thing that's the best about them, that is their own unique personality and self, you know. And so me looking out the window is kind of like me just kind of going, okay, it's just another performance. I was preparing for a Chicago audition, excuse me, and everyone was saying, oh, you don't want to do that audition. They want someone from Chicago. They know who they want. I'm like, okay, are you done? I'm going to go practice. You know, I'm an idiot. I'm going to go see what happens. And I ended up being, I think it was one of 9 finalists, and all the others were from Chicago. So I don't know if I was the only non-Chicago idiot or, and then in the super finals, it was me and the 2 people that got the job, Odo and Jim. And, but I was warming up for the finals and sitting in the hotel in Chicago, and this man was walking past the window, you know, and I'm looking at him, and he was in his suit and had a bag lunch. And I was like, oh, you know, look at you. You're just walking to another day at, you know, another day at the office. It's like Tuesday for you. And for me, it's this day that's going to determine the rest of my life and how much my mother loves me. And if I get to be more loved than my sisters. And then I realized, no, Jeff, it's Tuesday for you too. And I wrote that on my inspiration sheet. It's just a Tuesday. So that's that look out the window. It's like, oh, it's Tuesday. And I think I get to keep who I am a little bit more. Whether it's a good thing or not, we find out when we make noise out the bell. But I have to come in and do the talking too, you know. And I say, how's it going? They say, good. How are you? Good. Okay, do your magic line performance. And they're like, okay. And then they walk out and they say, hello, today I will be performing for you Richard Strauss's Till Eulenspiegel, you know, and they do the performer thing, and I stop and I say, okay, what'd you do? I cut them off, you know, and I say, what'd you do this weekend? And they're like, I went to the football game. I'm like, okay, say 3 more sentences, you know, about your weekend, and then go into your Richard Strauss story. And they say, well, we went to the football game and had a hot dog, and we lost again, of course. The band was really good. And hi, I'm Jenny, and I'm going to play some Strauss for you. Like, just to get into your normal, keep your normal voice. Another thing I do in masterclass, someone walks out and they change how they walk, right? They tippy toe, they just, I don't know, become Canadian or something. My mother would yell at me, stop being so Canadian. And I said, okay, do it again. You know, you change too much. Go do it again. And they walk off stage, and it's like, you know, walk like that. Walk like you're walking off stage. Right. So you can, the other things you can do is decide when you're backstage that, okay, you've just done the performance and you've nailed it. Now walk into this other room here and just perform it again for a gravy run. You know, woohoo, this is the celebration, not the test. Yeah. Some random thoughts.
No, it's great. It's so much about, I mean, everything we've been talking about is it's so hinges on awareness. Either it's, you know, your awareness as the teacher watching, or our own awareness as, you know, as a musician sitting in your practice room and working on stuff, or just walking down the street, and what kind of thoughts are going through your head about a performance you had or something coming up or an interaction with your partner or whatever. And being able to notice what's going on and look at it kind of out of curiosity, not judgmental, and then just kind of, you know, decide, is this helpful or not? And like, how do I need to address this? And do I need to address it right now? It's one of those things that, like you were saying, when you're on stage and something happens and it's like, now is not the time to address this. But if, you know, you've never ever seen a thought and said, I don't need that right now, and just and actually intentionally let that thought go, or, you know, whatever it might be in whatever situation, it's really hard to do it, especially in a, you know, higher stress, possibly, situation like performing.
Yeah. Yeah. I love believing that nothing is intrinsically stressful. That we just in this situation that I am super stressed about, there's guaranteed to be other people on this planet who would look at that and go, it's not stressful at all. You know, I built right. I built towers for 2 summers, 300 foot high. The highest one I was at was 350 feet and no safety lines. So if you slip, you die. Yeah, it was funny. On my first day, one of the things the foreman said, he's like, you know, once you're above 40 feet, it doesn't matter how much higher you go. Thanks.
Great. Thanks. Yeah.
Nothing. So it's all relative, and it's but we make the mistake of having that on or off fear. You know, it's full on. I'm fearing. Okay, on. go gadget fear. Yeah, a little bit too much. Yeah, you're saying about awareness. I also love the two things of intention and attention. You know, and what are those two things? And then it goes into definition of success. What is an actual success? You know, and is it getting the result, or is it lacking mistakes? You know, or is it getting that sweet slur and going, you know, trying, seeing what happens? Anyway, you know, that's what we get to do. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I know that, I mean, you've got a lot going on online, a lot of really cool, exciting things happening. Do you want to just talk a little bit about what you're doing right now with Fearless and just in general, if you want? I know that you're still obviously touring with Canadian Brass a lot and doing amazing things there. But I'd love to hear about kind of what's going on online, where people can contact you, where they can check up to see what's going on and find out more information about all things Fearless and Jeff.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it's the Fearless Performance Company has exploded. Thank you to Dr. Katie Carnaggio, my partner in all of this, super, super prolific partner. And so and she's helping me figure out my life too and how to get my tasks done a little bit more. So we have a podcast and we're loving it. It's really exciting. We just released our 7th episode, not to date this episode or anything, but. Yeah, and it's called Performing Beyond Doubt. Woo. And it's Katie and me talking about. I was trying to figure out the grammar. I wasn't saying just listen to me. It's 30 minutes or less, and we're really trying to make it be a resource of real learning. And she has a background in cognitive science and all this smart book stuff that's awesome. And then I slip in jokes. Tell stories and yeah, and we're trying to also have it be, you know, really accessible by being able to tell on each episode what the topics are. So it can be a nice library resource. And then speaking of libraries, fearless-performance.com is the website. And that's where our courses, online courses are living. And the most exciting thing I think that we're doing, aside from the podcast, is this community that you are an awesome active part in as well, called Elevate! Exclamation mark. That's implied. I'll try that again. Elevate!
Excellent.
That was good. Yeah? Okay.
And, yeah, good reading.
That's a community. When you join, you get access to all the audition training video courses and how to make an audition book and how to do 3 months worth of training that has helped percussionists win Cleveland Orchestra audition and a French horn player get into Canadian Brass. And anyway, all this stuff. And and then there's the community. And that's, you know, really what is built so that we can do what you and I have just talked about, which is experience performance. And it's just been a dream that we can go somewhere 24/7 and perform for someone else. And we have it now where you can do it live and just schedule. And that's the greatest thing, I think, is scheduling that performance. Hey, can I play my C major scale for you in 2 days at 4 o'clock? Oh, and that, you know, after Fearless Camps, I know you've experienced this, where you go around the table and each person picks a task, a non-music task, like, I got to apply for my new passport renewal. And then they have to email the person next to them when they've got it done sometime within a week. And they say, and I go, when, you know, when are you going to do it? And they say Wednesday. And I say, okay. And then this magical thing happens. Then I say, what time? And they go, oh, this is real. As soon as you have to do it by 2 p.m. now it's like, oh, I am going to do this. Yikes. You know, so that's it. Once you schedule that performance, it ends up giving you good fear, you know, and we practice differently. I think we know we got to go and do this thing live or just video something and post it for people to comment on. It's a really great constructive community. And we've had talks on there that are, as you know, about family and performance in other areas and really great stuff. And we do. So we get a special guest every month. We have Daniela Candeliari coming. She just conducted the New York Philharmonic a few weeks ago. We had Otis Murphy, saxophone professor here at IU. We had Suzanne Nelson, this idiot who plays bassoon with the Boston Symphony. maybe my big sister, one of my big sisters. Yeah. So what else? Yeah, that's some of the stuff. We're writing monthly articles for Horn and More, the IHS free, International Horn Society's free newsletter. And that's been, yeah, yikes, we've been busy.
That's great. Yeah, there's nothing like for me personally, I've always been the most productive when it's leading up to a performance or something. So anything that's coming up, whether it's playing for a friend or, you know, playing for someone in Elevate or, you know, an audition or, you know, whatever, I've never made more progress than in a lead up to something like that, I feel like. And I've never been a better practicer, like more efficient and, you know, with higher standards and everything else than when it's being prepared for something specific.
Yeah. So. Good fear, we call it.
Yep. Absolutely.
So the Elevate is opening its doors again in early April. So you can sign up at fearless-performance.com/join. And then you'll just find out, kind of, you'll be the first to know when the registration is going to open.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. It's been a wonderful community. It's really been fun to get in there and see both being inspired by other people working on cool projects or working on audition rep or anything. And then also just the, like you said, the supportive aspect. It's really important, I think, to have that, you know, community.
And you're a great part of it. You bring so much beauty. I love you. And I love what you bring.
Thanks, Jeff.
Whenever I get to see you, but everyone else too. Thank you. Yeah. And it's, what's great about it too, is it's all levels, right? Everybody has a quality gap from where they, whether they're Yo-Yo Ma or a beginner. You work on self-knowledge, what you do to yourself in performance, and how you walk out there and execute. So, and so while we closed the doors the first time, we had a bunch of people register, but then we had to stop that so that we could focus on the people and the running of the community itself. And so that's what we're going to do again, is let some more people in and then shut the doors again. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll make sure to link, I'll put links in the podcast notes for all this stuff. So people can click on those easily and find that. And they can also follow you guys on Instagram and Facebook, I believe.
The podcast would be awesome. Yeah.
Right. Following, like, comment, share, all that good stuff with podcasts. Yeah. Help support good missions and good content.
Yeah.
I was so excited to have you. And I mean, from when I started the podcast, I was like, when do I want to have Jeff on? I got to get Jeff on. So it's an honor to have some of your time. And I know that it's a challenge to get you pinned down. So I so appreciate your time and your excellent insights and good words and all that good stuff. So until next time, thanks, Jeff.
Yeah. Thanks, Kevin. Keep doing what you're doing. Much love.
Another big thank you to Jeff for a wonderful conversation, and thank you all so much for listening. You can keep up to date on all new podcast releases and other exciting news by following me on Instagram at Mindful Musical Life, or by visiting the website, mindfulmusicallife.com. If you have a suggestion for a future topic or guest, please reach out. I'd love to hear your ideas. Remember, anyone who might be interested in mindfulness coaching can reach out via Instagram or my website to schedule a free 30-minute consultation. And lastly, if you like the podcast, please take a minute to rate, review, and subscribe. Thank you again for listening, and see you next time.